back into mute, I believe.
Joe Barucci.
Jeff Patterson. Right,
okay, Joe Barucci.
John Metcalf.
John Metcalf. And somebody who got drowned out in between John and Joe.
Jeff Patterson.
Jeff Patterson.
Mike Ferreira.
Okay. Mike Ferreira.
Ace Ramirez.
Ace Ramirez, welcome, Ace.
Dave Moss is here.
Dave Moss, welcome, Dave. I think it was somebody else who spoke up that I didn't get. I've got Carol Middleton, Victoria, Andy, Joe, John, Mike, Ace, and Dave.
Jeff Patterson.
Jeff Patterson. There we go. Hey, you're the one that got talked over there, Jeff.
Paul Miller.
Paul Miller. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
And who else? Is that it so far? Okay. Well, fabulous. Hey, at West Point, Joe, I know you're not going to be able to make it, but you know, I would point out for all of you guys that if you can't personally make it to the event at West Point for whatever reason, I think somebody, I'm not sure if on the call, had a long-standing trip to Italy planned, and you know, a couple of other things like that. I would highly suggest that you send key instructors and or key branch manager / program director types to that event. And for Inner Circle members, what I would suggest is that you send staff, if they're coming without you, send them to the peak performer days with instructions to attend the peak performers meetings. So if you have staff that you'd like to bring to attend the Inner Circle meeting with you, you're welcome to. There isn't really any cap on that, as long as they do in fact work for you or sleep with you or some combination of the two, hopefully. Not a lot of that. But staff who attend without you, I would suggest that they come to the Peak Performers meeting, not to the Inner Circle meeting. The other thing, and Carol, I think you found this valuable, is you're always welcome to bring staff, and typically nowadays we've been overlapping Inner Circle and peak performers. Carol, what you did last time is you had, name is slipping me for a second here, but your branch manager there came to the peak performers meetings on the days that the meetings overlapped, and then you both stayed for the peak performer day after the fact. So oftentimes, that's a good strategy as well. Carol, did you find that valuable for the last meeting?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, she picked up stuff that I was glad to hear from her too. About.
Yeah. There certainly was some valuable material that Master Middleware was going over while we were in the other room, and luckily the stuff that was going on in that room is the stuff that we always make sure we get on video and audio. So I believe it's all up at the website. Is that true, Master Middleware?
That's right. Yeah. That's all of that.
Good. We do have some new old members, if that's a way to put it. Ace, welcome back to the team.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're very welcome. And Ace, you're running a very successful Muay Thai program. You're training and developing Muay Thai instructors and running a successful school there. Give everybody just a quick thumbnail on your background as you come back to our team.
Well, on the martial arts background side, I am actually a traditional martial artist. I'm known right now as the Muay Thai guy, although I have certain levels in traditional karate and taekwondo, Korean arts, Japanese arts, Filipino martial arts instructor as well as submission grappling. So within my school, I do have those other forms, but right now I'm really known and focused with my Muay Thai programming. I do have affiliates spread throughout. I'm fortunate enough that I have students who run schools from Australia, UK, Canada, but most of them are spread throughout the United States. I am, this June actually, I'll be celebrating 30 years in the martial arts, so that's my little anniversary, but I'm actually in the middle of moving my location. probably in the next 30, 60 days, permits willing. So as Master Oliver said, I'm a new old member, so I was part of Inner Circle before, and right now is the perfect time for me to reinvent what's going on with operations and school and staffing and methodologies within the program and school. So I'm glad to be back here and to be able to learn.
Yeah, well, you're just a young pup, Ace. I in January, I was, I guess, celebrating 43 years in martial arts.
Oh, yeah, I'm very years. Humbled with...
and Jeff Smith has, I think Jeff Smith has, what would it be, 6 or 7 years on me. So, and I imagine we have a few of the guys in the call that, that have been around even longer, although I'm not sure there's anybody in the call that's older than I am.
Yeah.
You know, for those who are, you don't need to chip up, you know, speak up on that one.
I could have been training longer, but I get hit in the head a lot, so maybe I forgot, so it's one of those.
There you go. But welcome back, Ace, and
we're
also glad to have Eric Sabarge back in the group, although I haven't heard Eric on the phone call yet. From just a couple of administrative notes here real quick, is one is, I think from a communication gap, but we have a lot of you that are on the call miss your one-on-one calls. If you missed your one-on-one call because you didn't have anything particularly you needed to work on this month, that's fine. If you missed your one-on-one call because somehow there was a gap between getting it on your schedule and one thing or another, let's walk through that briefly. Toby, unless there's some unusual notification, the calls are the first Tuesday of each, or I'm sorry, the second Tuesday of each month, the second Wednesday of each month, and the second Thursday of each month. Right now, Jonathan, you're the only one that we have scheduled on Thursday because Monday, Tuesday, if I remember correctly, didn't work for you. And so what you can do is go in and put on your iPhone or your iPad or your Google Calendar or whatever it is, just go tell it that, you know, that the same time every month, on the second Tuesday or the second Wednesday or the second Thursday is your call time. And I have to freely admit that when I was scheduling like regular calls like this with Dan Kennedy, I always seemed to be scrambling at the last minute and panicked, you know, panic calling his assistant Vicky, who answered her phones 2 hours a week from noon to 2 Phoenix time on Wednesday, trying to figure out when the hell my call was, because I was the guy who could never keep track of it. And so I quite understand that. What we don't want to do is we don't want for myself or Master Milroy to set a day aside and do coaching calls and then have no shows and then reschedule them. Because obviously we set aside time aside, and frankly we've got about 100 hours a week of stuff to do, and we, or 120 hours a week of stuff to do and 80 hours of work. But there were quite a number who missed their call this week, and so it's what we're going to do is just I'm going to set aside next Tuesday and Wednesday to be working on other activities and be available on the phone. And if you missed your call this week on Tuesday, Wednesday, call at the exact same time next week on Tuesday, Wednesday. And the only exception to that, I guess, would be Jonathan. Jonathan, is today after the call still good for you?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but for those of you who missed your call, and a few of you are the unshakable, never miss your call. Dave Moss, I think there would have to be a hurricane and an earthquake for you to miss your call. And I noticed that you didn't make it. So, assuming that it could be one spring break, Easter conflicts, or two, a communication gap somewhere along the line. Any thoughts or questions?
And that's all on that topic. Everybody should make sure, if you can, go into the members' website and make sure that we do have a mobile number on hand for you. We've got the text message notification service set up so that, you know, the day, you know, a couple days before and then the day of your one-on-one call, you'll get a little text message reminder too. We don't want you to miss your call if you want to be there. Certainly, if we're going to block the time out, we want to make sure that we're hyper-productive with that time. But, so we're kind of implementing some additional systems to make sure that everybody's up to speed on when that is. So typically I send the calendar and the schedule out every week by email, typically every couple of weeks by fax, and then now we're also going to mail you a little package as well But if we have your mobile number on file, it's really useful, really easy for us to, you know, zap those text messages out to you and make sure you know about that. So just check your profile, make sure you've got a mobile number, and make sure it's marked as mobile. It'll say it right on the side, and then we'll make sure we get that those notifications out to you too.
Yeah, and I will say, typically July, August is the time when either I or a lot of you are traveling. So, you know, feel free again. Let me say this in two ways. One is, you know, try to limit scheduling or rescheduling appointments through me by email or fax or text or whatever. We've got Bob Dunn as the official keeper of the scheduling. And frankly, the only screw-ups we've had on scheduling recently have been when I scheduled it rather than Bob scheduled it because it didn't end up in my calendar. So if you have a pen, the office number is 727-540-0500. Bob's direct extension is 202. I think his email is tobywhatbdunn@natpma.com.
Yeah.
So bdunne@napma.com. So if you will do us a favor going through him rather than going through me, because occasionally I nod my head and it doesn't end up on my calendar and I end up double or triple booked. So that seems to work better, and I've never claimed that level of organization is one of my personal strengths. So I can teach other people to do things that oftentimes I'm not particularly great at doing myself. That seems to be one of them. But anyway, so let's start with pressing concerns and issues. Who has anything that's a pressing issue, crisis, or frustration that everybody else in the call and myself and Master Miller can go to work on helping you with?
I'm wondering, who can you get to write you a really good website? I don't want to name any people, but I started trying to use them, and man, you know, like somebody I was just about to hire, and so I looked at all her sample websites, and they took forever to come up. I thought, okay, I'm not doing that. And I don't know who to use. I want to really revamp my website, but I'm not a website developer, and I want somebody really good.
That's a good question. And you asked two separate questions. I'm not sure you realize it. What you said is, who can you get to write yourself a really good website, and then talk about website development? And you know, it is a good question. Something that we haven't done internally yet that I feel that we should do, and it's a question of when it goes on my plate and goes on Master Norway's plate, is what we really should be doing is either providing a complete template for people to use their own web developer to put up the site, or we should be providing, you know, done-for-you websites. We haven't been doing that as yet. It is on the list of things that I think both Master Miller and I feel like we should be doing. There are companies that are doing a decent job of that. I'm not sure there's anybody who's doing a fabulous job of that. Master Miller, what would you add to that? And again, two questions there. One is copywriting, and two is web developer.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Here's the conundrum. The best guy in the industry right now who is doing sites for people is Mike Perella with I Love Kickboxing. Now, the problem is his motivation. He has a different motivated self-interest than we do, and his motivated, meaning a school owner, his motivated self-interest is something like, for Ace Ramirez would be a great fit, like a fitness-ish type of a program where you can sell a $29 or $39 trial online, and he's gonna get half of that, right? Mm-hmm. So and he's set up to do Groupon deals and stuff like that. So as far as like the strategy, Mike's got the right strategy built in place, except for he wants them to buy online rather than to call the school. Mm-hmm. And what we know statistically is that you're better off having them call the school, right? So from a design standpoint, Mike is the only one out there who's really kind of following the linear sales model online, who's actually getting people, you know, who go to the homepage, who opt in, and who then buy online, right? And so his stuff is pretty good to model, but the second question that you asked is really the only reason we're not in that business right now. Really the only reason we're not currently building in for members is because of the copywriting piece of it, which when you have good sales copy that actually converts, that's what you should really be spending money on. All the logistics, like the how the website operates is really pretty easy. You can do that with WordPress, a $7 a month hosting program, and AWeber. For like $20 a month, you can have the thing done. You know what I mean? It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But it's writing the copy, writing the sales copy, getting the sales letter that's actually going to convert, doing the video testimonials, the video squeeze page, all that sort of stuff. That's really kind of what takes the energy, right?
Yeah.
So I know that doesn't exactly clarify anything for you, Carol, but Mike has the best model for converting a unique visitor to an opt-in and then to someone who could buy online.
When you're talking about women's cardio kickboxing.
Exactly.
He also has, like, kids' taekwondo sites in one thing or another. And, in fact, I've put one of his up for our corporate location in Westminster. And his promise is that he's going to generate searches and traffic and drive traffic one thing or another. And there's two sides to that equation. One is there just isn't all that much traffic in the kids market unless you go generate yourself. And then if you generate itself, you want to drive them to his sites, which is what he wants you to do. But it's not necessarily the most productive way to go about things. Let me restate a couple of things you just said, Toby. One is the numbers that I've seen recently, and this is big company, big advertising budgets, one of them was Nutrisystems. And Nutrisystems is spending, phenomenal amount of money on television advertising with big celebrity endorsements, everybody from Jennifer Hudson to Dan Marino and so forth, if you've seen their TV spots. What they have found is when they try to make the sale online versus they get you to go online and then call their call center, if their conversion rate is 300 to 400% better. If you call in to the call center, and again, this is a call center with God knows how many people sitting there at phone banks following scripts. So this isn't you personally as an owner-operator. This is people they're hiring in as inbound telemarketers. But they're finding 300 to 400% better conversion rate if they can get you to go to a live operator as opposed to try to register online. The side argument here is you do want to, and I don't think this has changed, is you want to have a site that tries to make a partial sale, gets an opt-in, and then makes a more complete sale, and ideally gets them to call you, and perhaps secondarily gives them an option to register for something online. The partial sale is enough of a sale to get name and email address. I prefer it to be name, email address, phone number, preferably a mobile number. Because if you get name, email address, phone number, and a mobile number, now you can do autoresponder text messaging. You can have a live person call them, and you can do autoresponder email marketing. The thing about that, what we're trying to accomplish on our end of FAFSA, and we're getting ready to update a lot of the franchise sites. But what we're doing with NAPNA is we're opting in an email address and a phone number at least, and then working on opting in a full mailing address. And we immediately autoresponder by a sequential direct mail. We autoresponder with a text message. And the message shows up on Bob Dunn's desk. He attempts to call them while they're still on the website. So we're autorespondering by email, text messaging, direct mail, and live outbound call, which we hope to be immediately. And and we would still rather they pick up the phone and call us, but if we can get a phone number and call them immediately, we have better results.
Unquestionably, by the way. It's by a far margin, by a very far margin. So
well, that's probably by a factor of, what would you say, 20?
Yeah.
What does by a far margin mean?
Well, if we get a phone number, call them immediately, we probably get a 20-time conversion versus getting an email address and dripping on them and hoping that they're going to contact us. So that's what he means is it's a major difference.
Yeah, and what we learned, by the way, which I think might be useful for everybody, what we sort of discovered, and this is a couple of years ago, so this isn't anything new, but what we discovered was the use of video on that initial squeeze page is very useful for buying that phone number. So basically, the best numbers that we've seen in martial arts school is about a third and a third. So if you have, let's say you have 100 unique visitors to your website in a month, you know, if you execute very well, you'll get about a third of them to opt in, and then a third of those to sign up for some kind of a trial, right? So a third and a third are kind of like your targets. That's kind of like executing very well, right? Now, a lot of that does depend on how the traffic is coming to you. So you've always got to factor that in. If they're just, you know, if you're generating the traffic, it's usually much more effective. If it's just organic traffic that happens to stumble across the site, it's typically less effective. But so
let me translate what you just said for a second. If I sent 10 pieces of direct mail, including a couple of long form, you know, long letters and so forth, and they finally decided to call and they went on the website and researched a little bit more, I mean, that's like a super gold lead, right? And versus they just happen to be out searching around, they show up on the website, and it looks a little bit interesting. So, and I'm overstating the case a little bit, but you get the sense. The second is compare that a third and a third with an inbound call. Our ratios typically are an inbound call we get between 80 and 90, you know, low 90s percentage-wise on appointments. So let's say that it's 80%, then we'll typically get between 80 and 90% of them to show. So you go from the a third and you haven't got an appointment yet to, let's say, 80 to 90% an appointment, then 80 to 90% of them showing. So again, that's indicative of how much more effective it is to get them to call you than to get them to opt in. But I finish the thought, Master.
Well, it's exactly right. And again, I would go to a different level of qualification of the unique visitor. And I would say that I know on our sites, for example, when we did some real deep analysis on this in iteration number two or three, I can't remember which, but what we discovered was when we're driving traffic from things like school programs and community events and, you know, those types of things where you're interacting with the customer base, right, where you're interacting with the prospect base, those guys, when they come to the website, of course they opt in at a much higher rate because you've already sort of built that personal relationship with them. You've already touched them in some way. So I think that, you know, that becomes kind of like that premium lead pool. The less premium lead pool, like you said, Mr. Oliver, just people who are out there Googling, you know, martial arts and they just happen to stumble by your site or something like that. So anyway, you know, definitely where the lead comes from does definitely determine something, you know, it does have a big a factor in how many opt-ins you get, you know, as a ratio. But what we did discover, which I think is useful for everybody, especially in this group, this is particularly valuable for you guys, is the use of video. And the use of video bought us their mobile number. So again, our target is, you know, the best we've ever done is a third and a third, so to speak. So it used to be just getting name, email. We could get about a third of them to opt in if we use some really good sales copy. So good headline, compelling, you know, couple of paragraphs of sales copy, and some free offer. Like, you know, put your name and email in here, you know, register here for a free report on the seven, you know, closely guarded secrets to doubling your child's self-confidence in 30 days or less for free, right? Something like that, right? Or a free CD or a free DVD. I think our offer at the time was the info kit, so it was a free DVD, a free two CDs and a free DVD, right? So that we would get about a third of the opt-ins. So think about that. Just static text, a free offer that's pretty compelling would get about a third of the people to opt in. When we added mobile number, many, 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 many less people opted in. Because, you know, the psychology of the person when they come to the website is they're protective of their information, right? You know, they don't want to give you, you know, they don't want you to call them. They're protective of that information. So getting their email.
If they're not fairly serious.
Right. It just kind of how people behave, how they think, right? And they say, well, yeah, I'll just give you a garbage email address. No big deal. I never check it anyway. So let's see what this offer is all about, right? Mm-hmm. So they just kind of fill the thing in. What our discovery was by adding that personal video, a little kind of talking head video, and nowadays we're actually updating all this stuff, but now there's actually even a better way to do it. But, you know, kind of like a little talking head video of someone who looks approachable, who seems friendly, right? So it's not the, you know, arms folded Korean grandmaster, you know, guy. It's the approachable martial arts guy talking, you know, to parents directly. You know, dear parents, you know, would you like to learn da 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 da? You know, whatever. So, you're really kind of making a personal connection with that person. That actually bought us the conversion ratio back to get their mobile number. So by
how
using
do you
that
mean
little video,
that you get their you get their number? Because I mean, they don't have to like give the number in order to see the video, do they? Or do they?
No.
The video is the content.
You use the video to get them sold enough. I remember you're making a small sale and then a bigger sale and a bigger sale. You use the video to get them sold enough to want to learn more enough so that they're going to give you their phone number as well as their email address.
Okay.
And
if they've landed on that initial page, you call it a squeeze page, and instead of just flat static text with a little personal kind of video there, that tends to create, if it's executed well, that tends to create enough of a personal connection where they build their perception of trust with you enough that they're okay putting their mobile number in. Basically, that's kind of what happened. So it was basically text versus video. That was really the only comparison.
Yeah. And again, with the mobile number, you're giving yourself the ability for two additional follow-up sequences. You're giving you the ability for autoresponder and sequential autoresponder text messaging. More importantly, you're giving yourself the ability to have somebody immediately call them, preferably while they're still on the website. And the biggest sin I think that that Master Miller and I have seen recently in talking to a fair number of schools is, you know, people give them lead information, they never get around to calling them, or they call them once, get a voicemail, and leave a voicemail. And actually, I guess I misstated. It gives you three routes to follow up. You can follow up with sequential broadcast voicemail. You can follow up with sequential text messaging. You can follow up with live outbound call. The broadcast voicemail, there's, you know, again, more legal issues with FTC about it, but I would assume they've given you permission by having given it to you. So, you know, at least for the immediate period, you can follow up with that. But see, not in the scheme of things, keep in mind, I mean, if you got a lead of somebody who's hot to trot for lessons, and you're doing your job well, so they're each worth $5,000 to your school once you get them enrolled. And if you can convert at least half of them, you've got $2,500 worth of potential income from a hot prospect. And those numbers may be a little high relative to most people's numbers, but you know, let's work with that. You know, what is the best way to assure you're going to have a high conversion rate to enrollment? Well, you know, the best thing would be to get your car, show up on the front door, knock on the door, and talk to them in person. Now, in practical terms, most of us aren't going to do that. But what's next? The live human being calls them while they're hot to trot, which is the time we know they're hot to trot is when they try to call you on an inbound call or when they're staring at your website. And then in sequential order from there, you know, big direct mail packages are probably next, followed by text messaging. Followed by broadcast voicemail, followed by email. What a lot of people.
What was the very first one again?
They get in the car, drive over to their house, show up on their door, knock on the door, and talk to them in person. And the disclaimer being, most of us aren't going to do that. Although, frankly, I've seen a few schools that probably they should be doing that because they get, you know, they don't get a lot of lead flow every month, and you know, and they're sitting at their desk moaning that they're broke rather than doing something about it. But that's not this group. But what happens is so many of us, you know, we're enamored of maybe sequential autoresponder email. We set up an AWeber follow-up, and we hit them with email, you know, twice a month forever, thinking that's going to do something. There was another stat that I saw recently. It was in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago. Tony, did you read that one? They were talking about how often big retailers, Nordstrom's, Macy's, et cetera, but the big, high-powered, intelligent retailers, how often they were emailing their customer lists. And the range was somewhere between 300 and 500 times a year.
Yikes.
Okay. Now, think about that. Is, you know, some of the best direct response marketers we know are doing two emails a day to their list. And so if you email to them once a month, I mean, that's just not even white noise. You know, nothing's happening there. You know, I don't know if twice a day is the right number, but I mean, look at Groupon. How often is Groupon sending out emails? And Nordstrom's and those guys are again sometimes twice a day. So,
well,
in
Metro, they don't have the advantage that we have. They don't have a personal relationship with you at the level that we do, right? So, like when you get a Nordstrom's email, it's an ad. I mean, all it is an ad, right? But what we're more like is information marketers. We're more like we can send them content every day about how to relate to their children better and how to be better, you know, how to improve their effectiveness as a parent and how to improve the life of their child. So when you have a personal dialogue with somebody, which, by the way, when you talk about sequential autoresponder email, you really should be text only, you know, looking like you sat down and personally wrote them a message. You shouldn't be an HTML formatted e-newsletter or anything like that. But we have that advantage over those major retailers. We have the advantage of, you know, speaking to them in a language that resonates with them at a more soulful level rather than just trying to sell them a new shirt, you know.
Yeah, and don't miss the point you just made. The more it looks like I just sat down and jotted off an email on my iPhone, the better off it is and the more likely it is to get a response from them. The more that is pretty, all kinds of graphics and nice HTML email, the prettier it becomes, the more like a color brochure it becomes, the less personal it's perceived. And what makes email effective is that your mom, your best friend, and your daughter or your aunt send you messages that you look at. What makes email ineffective is you get barraged with ads. The same thing is true, by the way, of direct mail. In most cases, direct mail, it looks like it's a note from your grandmother gets opened, and in most cases, if it looks like it's a solicitation for for a credit card or a refinance or whatever it might be, that's the stuff that gets thrown away. So, back to your other question on as far as developers. See, that's the dime a dozen question, is that there are a ton of people who don't have anything to do with martial arts who can do a beautiful WordPress website inexpensively. Hosting is practically free nowadays. And AWeber is one of the services to plug in. We have a link and everything up at your member site about that. The other one was it, LoopNet or something like that? What was the other text and voicemail?
Yeah, Call Loop.
Call Loop. But from a standpoint of a developer, yeah, call L-O-U-P, or is it call L-O-O-P?
L-O-O-P.
Yeah. The from a standpoint of developer within the industry, I have looked at a huge number of Champions Way websites. And I've looked at a few now. Herse Sandu is doing some martial arts stuff again, West Web Nation. And I worked with Herse pretty closely. I worked with Farid pretty closely in the past as well. My observation is this. The vast majority of the Champions Way websites I've seen are just absolutely horrible. And part of it is Champions Way pitch to people right now seems to be that all you need to do in marketing is Facebook and Twitter and Foursquare and whatever. And so they've got this whole thing about all the social media thing they're doing and how they're integrating your website with all the social media and all that stuff. And the vast majority of that doesn't work. And in fact, an awful lot of the strategy is going exactly the opposite. The last thing you want to do is drive them from your website to Facebook or Twitter. You know, once you got them at your web, the goal of Facebook and Twitter is to get them to your website or get them to call you if you're using those media. Herse has done some pretty decent sites. It comes back to, though, those guys are ultimately going to give you what you insist upon, and they are neither great copywriters nor are they great school operators. So what they tend to end up with is they tend to end up with giving people what they ask for, and most of the people who are asking for something pretty, not something effective. So that's the, I guess, the disclaimer. Would you disagree with that analysis, Massonori, or is that about right?
after we leave. I think we lost it. Anyway, Carol, I'm not sure we gave you a direct answer to that, but
we're looking at some websites that we kind of like, and we could write the stuff that we want, but we're not as smart as somebody who would do it better than us. But if we write it, then really all we need is like AWeber and so forth. Or I mean, who can change our website from what we've got to something different?
Well, that's a dime a dozen. You probably have
really?
You probably have 10 teenagers or young adults in your school who could, you know, throw together really pretty WordPress sites.
Okay.
All the way to the other extreme of, or not the other extreme, but I mean, you know, Hirsch could do a pretty good job as Webmation. You know, if you force them to do what you want done, changing the way.
What are you saying? Like Webnation is more on the expensive end of things.
No.
No.
But he's I would say much more competent than most. And Hirsch is a good guy. He came to one of my marketing boot camps. He's got a pretty good eye for things. But in most Hirsch, H-E-R-S-H, Sandu, S-A-N-D-O-O, Webmation, W-E-B-M-A, Webmation, M-A-T-I-O-N.
Oh, it's Mation,
yeah.
As with an M?
Yeah, Webmation.
Kind of like animation, but not.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But the big key here, Carol, don't miss the big key, and for everybody, don't miss the big key. You know, again, you can go on Fiverr.com and have somebody that'll build you a WordPress site for $5, right? You can go to Elance or Scriptlance or Rentacoder.com. I mean, there's a million marketplaces out there where people will build a website for, you know, nothing.
For nothing.
Right? But the big key here is you've got to know what the thing has to do and look like. They're not going to. See, the people who are, which is one of the reasons we haven't ever done this yet, the people who are in the business of selling websites are in the business of selling you a website. They're not in the business necessarily of making the website convert very well for you, right?
Right.
So, but if you know what you need, like you know where you want the opt-in box to be, and you know what data you want it to collect, and you know what you want the copy to look like, and the sorting page, and all that sort of stuff. And Carol, I can walk you through a couple of models that we have that I can show you some samples of.
Plus, Carol, I think it's on the website. You can read my old book, which is, I mean, it's 10 years old, but all of the basics for how a website should look and feel are still common. I think the one exception to that is I said at the time, you know, don't use video because it loads too slow, and now in the U.S. anyway, most everybody has broadband, so that doesn't hold up. But
I've read it, but it's just there's, you know, like, should I do it this way or that way, and I'm like, I don't know. I could just guess. I don't know which way works best.
Well, we had at the last meeting, we had a conversation about copywriting.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, copywriting is everything from writing the letter to what you say in the video, right? I mean, it's the script for the video, it's the script for the audio, or it's the writing in the letter. And I think a lot of people get bogged down in that, and it's something that I would say. I mean, frankly, in the martial arts industry, I'm probably the best copywriter in the industry, and, you know, Toby's a pretty close second, and then I'm not sure there's anybody else even in the running. Who else is pretty good? Although, you know, Perella.
Mike's stuff is pretty well done. Yeah.
Pretty good, yeah. And Lloyd's stuff is obviously pretty good. So, but the main thing is, honestly, Carol, nobody knows how to sell your school and to do an intro in your school better than you do. And what you do in a conversation with a new prospect and what you do in a first intro is just selling your program to verbally one-on-one. So,
well,
frankly,
should I, like, put three calls to action over on the right side? Should I make it look real clean? Should I?
You want simple.
So I can walk her through a couple of, you know, maybe offline, I can walk her through a couple of those sample sites that we have up so she can see the architecture. The architecture is very, very simple. It's sorting page, landing page, opt-in, that's it. It's so simple. It literally is three pages. You don't need any more than three pages.
Yeah,
so
we
can walk through all that.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's not showing up any more time right now, but you could look at freekarate.com, which we're going to update again pretty quick, but it's still pretty good. You could look at
free, F-R-E-E?
Yeah, freekarate.com. Okay. You could look at NAPMAfreeoffer.com, and you could look at NAPMA.com/private coaching session. All of them have a common format that we're looking for. Don't look at specifically what each one is trying to sell, but the structure, and that's what you want. Essentially, what you want is a simple page with a video, and a video of you and the camera in a uniform, the background explaining why the parents should want to find out more about your kids' program. Pointing them out a box to say, here, if you give us your name address or your name and email address and phone number, we'd love to give you a free report on why the 23 ways that martial arts is going to help your child do better in school and develop your self-esteem and give them more confidence. And then you take them to a page that is just laden with testimonials with sales copy. I mean, that's really the format. And of course, you just change the language if it's a Muay Thai program or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu program or a CrossFit program. So, I mean, that's the basic structure. Toby, question for you. Eric, I'm not sure he's joined us yet or not, but Eric had a question of me that I'm not technically on top of. He had a video with a squeeze page, but it didn't autoplay. And my first comment was, make sure it autoplays. Don't remind him to push the arrow button. And he was told that if the video was hosted at YouTube, that it can't autoplay when you land on the page. Is that right or wrong?
No, it can. Unless there's something new, unless something's changed in the last week or two. But there's a behind the embed code, you just put equals REL, the ampersand sign, REL.
Don't even worry about that. The answer is yes, it can. And the point was, the video should start playing as soon as they log onto the site with the volume turned up. Don't rely on them to push the play button because they might not do it.
This is Eric. Thanks, Toby. Is that something you could possibly just shoot me an email with that info?
Yeah, absolutely. Or just you can just jot this down too. It's the ampersand REL equals one. Auto. I'll send it to you. I got it right here. Let me test it first and make sure something hasn't changed in the last week.
Yeah. But there's your question, Eric, since you're with us. And Eric, again, on your page, I really thought your page was two pages. It should have been the intro video and an opt-in is pretty much the only thing on the page. And then everything else should have been behind that barrier.
Right. Okay.
Good. Let's shift gears. I mean, we spent a lot of time on the website. Now, let me finish this with just something that probably everybody knows, but let me restate it again. Is when you're looking at online, is you really have two things you're thinking about. One is your web page as an alternative to an info call. In the old days, we thought of people are either going to pick up the phone and call you or they're going to stop by the school, and it was about 80% they called you. Nowadays, it's they pick up the phone and call you, they stop by the school, or they go visit your webpage. And in many cases, people have conditioned themselves to go to your webpage first to evaluate, get a little bit more information before they talk to a live human being. And so the first most important thing is make sure you have it set up for a strong conversion in that format. The second thing, which is a completely different issue, is driving traffic from offline to online versus driving traffic from online to online. And what I mean by that is Google pay-per-click, Facebook pay-per-click, other stuff you can do with social networking, buying banner ads, all of that stuff. And I think with rare exceptions, what we've seen is the website works great for the kids market most strongly, driving them from offline to online and then back to call you or giving you an opt-in. Where for men's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA, Muay Thai, for women's cardio programs, etc., for the adult market,
you can generate as much traffic as you can handle from predominantly online sources. So in most places, the adult market, and that certainly includes things like Groupon and Living Social. Carol, I know you've had some negative experiences with you know, overload loading your pipeline with people who didn't convert on some of those things. But you can get good at pay-per-click on Facebook, pay-per-click on Google, pay-per-click on Bing, organic search, and in the adult market drive plenty of traffic. From the kids market, I just don't think there's enough traffic out there that you can rely on online to be anything as one of the additional small pillars. And Toby, have you seen an exception to that? Anybody who's predominantly driving kids martial arts program traffic or after school transported care from online? Or does anybody on the call have an exception to that?
You know, or organically, not really. But again, you know, if you think about the psychology of a buyer when they come to a web page, it makes total sense. When, you know, if it's mom buying something for herself or dad buying something for himself, it's kind of like a one-party decision. It's easy for that person to make, you know, right on the spot. As soon as it becomes kind of a third-party decision where now you're considering enrolling your child for something, it creates a different psychology. It creates kind of like some questions in the prospect's mind where they start thinking about things like, well, when are the classes, and, you know, how do I do it, and, you know, these types of things. So
that's the argument for why Groupon works well for women buying stuff for themselves.
Exactly.
But doesn't work particularly well that we've seen for women buying stuff for the kids is the Groupon psychology is, you know, sitting there at whatever time making an immediate decision. What there was a word I'm looking for there, but it's not see the coupon, go talk to the kid, go talk to the husband, have a little family discussion, and then go buy it because by then it's out of sight, out of mind. So it tends to work well, and the Groupon demographic is, I forget what the ratio is, but it's predominantly adult women, 20 to up to 40. So the things that are aimed at them directly work much better than the things that are aimed at kids or men. Anyway, so, something else that let's shift gears from websites. Anybody else have something that's a pressing issue to discuss?
Master Oliver, this is Ace from Ares. I did have a question about websites later on, but since we're going to shift gears, I have never done a summer camp for kids, and I just want to know if there's something that I should be looking at. I know it's pretty late in the game already, but I think tying it into my, you know, all the open houses and media that I will be pushing into a new area, it's something I could still be able to add into our menu of offerings. So is there any good starts that you would recommend with either, you know, models or just the fundamental running of it? I know that's a huge subject, but just something to start with.
Let me ask Dave Moss, Paul Miller, and John Metcalf to address that one at a time. So, Paul, are you free? Star 6 to unmute if you're muted. I don't hear Paul yet.
And I guess more specifically with regards to summer camp, do most people who have been successful with them, do they offer them in certain blocks, meaning to say obviously you could do them in, you know, for the summer, but do most people offer them as five-day blocks and sold almost a la carte that way and price them obviously discounted if they buy more, but, you know, things like basic times that they would have and, you know, start time, stop time, things of that nature.
Let me try this again. John Metcalf, Dave Moss, or Paul Miller, can you guys unmute yourself and address that?
Okay. It's Jonathan Metcalf.
Here's Jonathan. Okay.
So, full disclosure, I've downsized my summer camps over the last few years as a choice. So I'm running 1 month now. When the economy shifted, I found that, you know, I used to run 10 weeks of summer camp every week of the summer, and that was really successful for a while. It was, you know, $60,000-$70,000 or something like that. I'm sorry, did you say something?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, you're good.
And then two or three years ago, enrollment started to drop, so I've reduced the number of camps I have, number of weeks of camp I have, and my enrollment dropped a little bit, but not enough to be disappointing. So now I have a smaller number of higher enrollment camps, so I'm happy with that.
Which
so number one I would recommend, Ace, is don't try to run 10 weeks. You know, pick a few weeks. And I don't have a suggestion about which ones. I can tell you, most people have camps in the middle of the summer all set up, but towards the beginning and the end, a lot of times people don't. So that's something to think about. My personal choice has been I'm going to run the last week of June and then the following 3 weeks and just get it all done.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But some people like to spread it out. I just don't want to do that because I want to hire somebody for a month and then let them go.
What do you have for your drop-off and pick-up hours?
My camp runs
And also the cutoff age.
My camp is ages 6 to 10. I'll take 11 and 12-year-olds if they're like my students and they're dying to be in the camp because were in it since they were 9. My camp runs 9 to 5 with a early drop-off and late pick-up of 8 to 6. Is free.
What do you suggest if they do an early drop-off? How do you charge?
I don't charge them for the extra hour. The reason I even phrase it that way is because I don't, you know, at 8 o'clock in the morning, I don't feel like doing anything, and the kids show up, and they kind of unpack and hang out and drool and play dodgeball, and then we actually start our schedule at 9 o'clock.
Understood.
I don't want to offer any substantial value in that first hour because I don't think we're going to deliver it, and then I don't want to offer a substantial value at the end, last hour, because a lot of times my instructors and staff are pretty busy with the other classes going on by that time of day. So I offer camp 9 to 5 with free lot drop-off and pick-up. So that's sort of my solution to that problem. And
John and Ace, hang on a second. Can I jump in for just 1 second? And Ace, just to, I really kind of want to put a fine point on exactly what your question is. I know John's on it, but because there are only two questions in any of these activities, right? Mm-hmm. There's number one, how do you market it and sell it? And then number two is what do you do to deliver it, right? Mm-hmm. So correct me if I'm wrong, but and this is what John's talking about right now. But Ace, what your particular question is, this is just for my thinking. What your particular question is the execution part of it. Is that right?
That is true, yes.
Okay.
Considering I don't have previous experience to make better this year, it's literally my initial launch, so I'm trying to not reinvent the wheel and at the same time not wait 5 years to correct those mistakes as well. So
I can email you my schedule for the week. And you know, it's a pretty well-developed schedule and has class times and, you know, the drink breaks that are built in and, you know, here's 4 martial arts classes in the schedule, here's a theme activity, here's a game. So if that's helpful for you, that can answer probably a lot of the questions you just asked.
This is also one of the first times I have a staff who can pretty much facilitate it, and I really kind of want to just, you know,
let them be better
than I am in the execution.
Let me interject a couple of pluses and minuses here, Ace. And if Paul Miller is handy, unmute yourself, and let me get Paul in the conversation, and Dave Moss, because I think they probably had quite a bit of experience with this, too, is... Here's the dark side, and anybody else who's had some experience with this chip in, here's the dark side, is you decide there's a little bit of extra money to be made on summer camp, and then you take your primary full-time staff for the school and run them ragged all summer. And now in the kids' market, you hit prime time, well, for everybody, prime time, mid-August through early September, and you've got everybody so worn out and burnout that back to school comes and their level of energy is a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10, and you do crappy numbers. And the second piece of that is, and again, I've seen our own schools do this well and do it poorly, and I've also seen some people do some fabulous numbers. One of the best that I've ever seen was Will Mayer for years in Columbia, Maryland. I mean, he was making a high six-figure net on his summer camp every year with probably no more than 3 to 5 hours a week of his own personal time and no more than 3 to 5 hours a week of his full-time staff time. He had a complete separate staff for the summer camp. He promoted it pretty much year-round, promoted it hard starting in January, hired a full-time school teacher to run it, and again has six-figure net income over the summer from it. But the risk is you don't want to promote the camp with seven kids paying $200 each. Is the biggest thing is you want to make sure that every week you're going to have the camp, you've got 40 or 50 kids paying a decent tuition, so there's enough revenue to justify it. And if you're going to use your regular staff to do it, you got to make sure there's no more than a couple weeks, and that by the time you get to peak times and back to school, if they're all fresh and they have a little bit of a vacation and they're ready to hit the ground running, they're not burning out. Does that make sense? And what your employee will have a tendency to do is they'll see short-term bucks, and you give them some incentives and so forth, and then they're all excited about the short-term bucks, but then they end up so burnt out that the rest of your operation goes to hell, and you've got to be very careful about that.
And that's what I was afraid of, and I've never implemented before, because previously I would use my primary staff. Now I think I could have a staff that's more dedicated just for that, and they wouldn't take away, or I should say they're different personnel than would be running my afternoon and evening classes. So therefore, I guess what Toby was also saying was, you know, I could probably pay them separately or a percentage because they're really running more of the meat of it. You know, so it's not like, hey, guys, I'm already paying you. Now you got everyone dreads the summer. Now I could actually say this is what these guys specialize in, and that's really what they're known in our school, and they can continue to drive it and not just drop it as soon as, like, the first class starts. They could continue to kind of, you know, bring more people into it as the weeks get closer or adding on. So I guess that answers my question with regards to it. I mean, it's, you know, to keep it simple and not getting everybody burnt out, and this is probably why I'm going to do that the first time.
Saying all of that, and sounds like we lost Paul, but he may be the best person on the phone to answer this. But there's a huge external market outside of your current student base for this. And the challenge is that the moms in that market start as early as January looking for those kind of camps and activities. And so clearly, like, if you're going to market it to the external market starting right now, is none too early. In fact, you're already behind the eight ball.
Yes, I realize.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, that actually led into another website question because, you know, I happen to have a lot of domains, and some of them are dedicated more as feeder sites that are like WordPress-based and what have you. So how do you suggest that? Do you recommend that there's one prospecting site, or because you have different programs, let's say, now there's a summer camp for kids as opposed to a Muay Thai program for adults, do you think each of those should have its own domain and it goes to its own, I'm going to say, a landing page that may live and breathe in a separate WordPress or something like that, or should they all go to one thing, which I really don't want to clutter. I don't want them to go to one website, let's call it the one school site, and there's 50 million choices. I'd rather it also, I guess, on a searchability basis. If you're looking for summer camps, it'll go to a summer camp page as opposed to it being a karate-dominated page, and they're like, well, there's a little blip on the side for a camp. So maybe it's something we don't do very well. Your take on that?
In almost all cases, you're better off with a separate landing page. And
by the way, the numbers that we've seen so far, Ace, is 3 or 4 choices on the landing page is the maximum amount you want to have. So if you have like one central domain, like one central homepage, you can have a sorting page where it says, you know, a nice image, you know, kids martial arts, click here, adult martial arts, click here, fitness kick here, click here, something like that. 3 or 4 options are the most options you want to have on any one page. So, and your concern is exactly right. They should all be congruent with each other. You don't want to have like hardcore knife fighting next to kids. So, I'm not sure if you saw those numbers, but anything more than 3 or 4 choices and it starts to get way too diffuse. So, you know, 2, 3, or 4 is the right number.
Well, there was a maybe somebody on the call. I'm trying to remember whose page it was. It'll come to me in a second. But promoting a Tai Chi program, and it had a video about the Tai Chi program, and the person demonstrating Tai Chi and talking about Tai Chi was standing right next to a boxing ring. And see, that struck me immediately as being completely incongruent. Right.
Correct.
Because the reason I want Tai Chi is I want low impact and I want stress relief in one thing or another. I don't want to be, you know, in a boxing ring. And so you've got to be also highly aware of that. And, you know, and sort of the Muay Thai thing, I may be looking for a martial arts discipline-oriented program for my child, but if I see a picture of, you know, two guys looking like, you know, traditional Muay Thai guys kneeing each other, you know, it immediately turns me off, not, you know, gets me excited about it. So you do have to be very careful about those things. And I did that, I forget what the company was, but recently, maybe it was the Wall Street Journal, they did the little scanner thing, they took me to a scanner. Oh, I know what it was. It was a repeater antenna for your cell phone that you can put in your house. But then they took me to a page where I had no idea how to get to what it was they were advertising. And, you know, God knows what they spent. They probably spent $10,000 for the ad and, you know, lost my attention almost right away because I just couldn't figure out what the hell, you know, the deal was.
So then are URL forwards not helpful? So, for example, let's say it was, you know, kidsummercamps.com or what have you, but then it wound up on, you know, newjerseykarate.com/something. Number one, that probably doesn't help its search engine in Google that way, but should it live and breathe on its own? Should each one live and breathe on its own WordPress site so it's all that, as opposed to there's all these clickable links on the same one? I don't know if I explained that properly, but
I think without getting into too much of the technical detail, what matters is to have a focus page that's congruent on what they were expecting to find.
Okay.
And so if it's a subdomain or if it's a subpage of the main domain or whatever, you know, again, you know, depending upon what the main domain is, I don't think it makes a lot of difference. And the, you know, the biggest thing is, are they clicking a link, in which case it doesn't really matter much what the domain name is, or are you driving them from offline, in which case it's got to be something you need to type because they're not going to misspell, right? You know, I've seen people try to advertise in the newspaper something, and I'll never figure out how to type it. But, you know, if I'm just clicking a link, they don't even have to see what the URL is.
Could I at a later date get like a little bit of a website analysis just to see what I should change, and or maybe I'm using the wrong names or what have you? Is that something that I
absolutely. Yeah, is that me and Toby an email, and we'll both be able to look at it before we partner.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You bet.
And you know, from a macro standpoint, just for everybody, since we happen to be on this topic, but they're really only kind of two concerns. The main concern is what does a human being think about when they get there. So, you know, we're talking about the URL and stuff like that. You know, if I'm looking for martial arts for my precious little 4-year-old or 5-year-old daughter who, you know, has a self-confidence issue, and I look at the URL and it's, you know, how to kick him in the ass and poke him in the eyes.com/kids, well, that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
You know, because that kind of tips your hand. So there's a sales argument from a customer-facing standpoint. The second argument is a search engine optimization argument. And from the search engine optimization argument, that's always secondary to what a customer is going to do when they get there, right? But from the search engine optimization standpoint, what we want to use is called like a hub and spoke strategy, where you have a central website that you drive most of the traffic to because more traffic equals, you know, Google thinking you're better, right? So you do kind of want to route traffic to that hub, but you don't want that to screw up what the prospect is thinking or seeing or any of that stuff. You know what I mean? So always put the customer first, and then the bot second. You know, that's kind of, I think that's a pretty good rule, you know?
Yeah, because some people design sites for the search engine optimization, but when people actually get there, it's almost meaningless for them. What was that website in the guy in
shitthatworks.com.
Shitthatworks.com. Yeah, so for your kid's website, making a shitthatworks.com/ kids summer camp is probably not a good idea. Okay, other pressing issues. Joe, I know you had some staffing concerns and development with the new school last time we were at the meeting. Anybody else have something that's pressing?
Mr. Oliver, just really quick before we transition, you know, we had the you and I both had the same question over the last few days from a couple of different people, and I think it deserves a quick a quick shout out. And we talked a little bit about this on the email, but when we're talking about keeping everybody focused on their stats, right, focusing on the actual performance of their business. I had the same question
yes,
from
point.
Two or three people. We talked about this earlier. I had this exact same sort of question articulated to me differently by two or three different people over the last number of weeks. And let me describe a common dysfunction. What happens to many folks when they become kind of a new member, even a key performer or Inner Circle or Maximum Impact, for that example, is they see sort of all these resources that are out in front of them, and they start to really see how see that there are lots of things that they want to accomplish, right? And sometimes that can be a little overwhelming. It's kind of like if a white belt student came into a school and you laid out 5 years of curriculum in front of them, right? They would just be a little overwhelmed. But the core question that's buried in that is, listen, I really want to take the school to the next level as quickly as humanly possible. Where do I start, right? And a lot of that is how we're working directly with that member to help them sort that out. But I think it's vitally, vitally, vitally important, and you've been one of the best that I've ever heard in this particular area at managing this. It's vitally, vitally important that you make those decisions about where do you start first based on, number one, what's going to make money for you quickest, and number two, based on the actual results of what you're currently doing. So it's very easy to get distracted and get off on, and I'm not using today's call as an example, but, fixing the website or fixing the facility or, upgrading the bathrooms or putting in baby changing tables. There's all sorts of things that you can do, but when you go back and look at the actual metrics of the business, how many warm leads? What's the conversion ratio to intro? What's the conversion ratio to enrollment? What's the conversion ratio to renewal? And what's the customer value? And then divide by retention. That really kind of tells you where you should be spending energy quickest, if that makes any sense. So, Mr. Albright, I know you had the same question a couple times, and so did I. What would you say about
that? Yeah. Well, let me say philosophically, even stronger, an abundance of financial resources cures many ills. And so you always
the way you've said it that resonates with me extremely well is there is no crisis created by a lack of money that an abundance thereof can solve.
Yeah, that's the one I stole from Gary Halbert.
I like it.
His deal, as relayed at least by John Carlson, was called Operation Money Suck. Is the landlord's banging the door wanting to evict you. The IRS is levying your account, and there's 22 other crises. And the last thing you want to do is deal with any of those things. What you want to do is sit down and figure out how to get more revenue coming in, because that's the only solution to any of the problems. And so you lock the door, turn off the phone, and go to work on figuring out how to, get an avalanche of money coming in, because it solves all the other problems. From a standpoint of where to start, what most people do is they start by working on the things that they're already pretty good at, because the reason that they're pretty good at them to begin with is that was things that they were innately interested in or innately had some aptitude on. So I always see martial artists go to work on their curriculum, or they go to work on their class schedule or their class structure or their class format. And sometimes I talked to one school owner in Chicago that was turning over 30% a month. In his case, that's, for God's sake, he needs to work on his retention and figure out all that stuff. But in many cases, that's not the deal. And oftentimes we find the deal that also isn't more traffic in the front door. It's the leads you're getting aren't converting very well, or the people who are coming in for an intro aren't coming back, or the people you're asking to enroll aren't enrolling, or if they are enrolling, they're enrolling, but the price is too low. So the priority always is you should almost always have a little sheet in front of you that says this business is simple. It's about enrollments, it's about renewals, and it's about retention. And if anything that you're going to do on a day-by-day basis isn't going to get you more enrollments, higher percentage conversion to renewal, or better retention, why the hell are you doing it? Because really, that's all there is. There's get more new students in, you need a higher percentage, keep them longer.
Or worst case, if you're doing anything other than that, you know, what would happen if you just stopped for a while and fixed these other couple problems? You know, what would happen? I mean, what would happen? What would be the worst thing that could happen, you know?
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, and sometimes that's something as stupid as, you know, you've got a full-time human being doing filing and paperwork and accounting, where really a 40-hour week job really should be a 5-hour month job. And most of what that person's doing shouldn't be happening anyway. You should just be throwing stuff away or putting it in a shredder or stacking the next one on top of the last one.
Extend that particular argument out to the next phase. And I happen to have seen this, in fact, in a couple of these cases. This is actually the case where, you know, I have this crisis, but yet I have the whoever it is over there doing 20 hours a week of bookkeeping. Well, what would happen if you just had her stop and took everybody on the whole team and they stopped whatever they were doing and they went and called the leads that you have sitting on your desk, or they went and, you know, worked on, you know, generating new leads from the community, you know, thing, or the movie theater, or the, you know, the elementary school, you know?
You're talking about the week we took over in Atma.
Well, right. I mean, yeah. I mean, what would happen if you just stopped? I mean, you know, what would happen? What would be the worst thing that could happen? I mean, yeah, the books don't get done for a week, but, you know, that's not going to matter if you run out of money, you know? So if you just put everybody on the team on the right job, you know, on a different job, on creating money, frankly, what would happen? And you can solve all the crises that create with additional money, you know? So,
yeah.
I think it's useful perspective.
The staffing problem on that is, of course, an awful lot of people that you have around are really comfortable with dealing with paper, or really comfortable looking at a computer screen, or really comfortable doing martial arts, but not comfortable leaving the school, knocking on doors at elementary schools or churches or whatnot, or not terribly comfortable picking up the phone and calling human beings. And that's either a training issue, or it's an aptitude issue, or it's a motivation. And a lot of times we surround ourselves with people who are really comfortable with or good at doing stuff that's essentially irrelevant to our business, because our business is only about go get more students, make sure you renew them, and then make sure you keep them. And all of the other peripheral stuff is pretty irrelevant. In fact, it's stuff that you can contract out for much cheaper than you can do it internal in most cases. But the other thing was on the stats issue this week is a lot of people don't keep good numbers because when they find out the results are depressing. And so, you know, it's better to one of the Think and Grow Rich things was having, I forget the way he phrased it, but, you know, realistic understanding what's in fact going on. And if you don't really know what's going on, you can't go to work on fixing it. And so you want to not be afraid to keep the numbers because, you know, consciously or subconsciously you're afraid of what they're going to tell you about your operation. You want to have really good numbers because that's the only way that you go about fixing it. And really want to be paying attention to that. Anyway, so we got about 10 or 15 more minutes. Anything else that's a pressing crisis or a fabulous opportunity that's come up for anybody recently that would be useful for all of us to discuss? No?
Guy.
Yeah. Always amazing. Do we have Mike Ferreira still on the phone? I think the mute thing is the problem.
Yeah, well, you know what? While Mike is getting unmuted, *6 on your phone, unmute you. For anybody who is promoting summer camp, you know, there are a bunch of online resources, and again, you don't want to get yourself sucked into, you know, spending 100 hours behind the computer, but it is really useful to have the 17-year-old, you know, brown belt or whatever, who can do this stuff for you. There are a couple of websites. There's mysummercamps.com that is actually not free to be listed on. They have a free version, but they have a non-free version, too, that's kind of like a premium version. That's a pretty useful tool. They have a lot of traffic to that website. Get you a backlink. But they've referred a few people to me over the years, maybe, you know, two or three a summertime, something like that. So it's a pretty big marketplace. And there are a few others that are like that too. So you might do a little bit of search, you know, do a Google search on summer camps in your area. And, you know, there are some community sites that will allow you to list for free and things like that. So, you know, I'd put one of those 17-year-olds on, you know, 2.5 hours of just, you know, searching around for places that summer camps are listed. It is a pretty big, you know, community activity that's happening all over the place. So it's a pretty big marketplace of people out there looking for it. So there is a lot of infrastructure that you can, you know, take advantage of.
Yeah, and they're like I know in the Denver metropolitan area, and I'm sure same is true, you know, Maryland and Fresno and Dallas and D.C. But there are some pretty big parent sites that really has become the go-to place for those things. Some of them are linked to newspapers. Some of the newspapers that are, or magazines that are parents only, have shifted to predominantly digital. But there are some pretty good online resources for that and in most places. And there's some, you know, there's parent magazines, parenting magazines. A lot of them do a summer camp guide. You may have missed that. Our local daily paper for years, I don't know if they still do, did a summer camp guide that was inserted into the entire daily run every spring. So be on the lookout for all of those things, because they are resources that parents are used to looking at in many cases. And, you know, and go through and survey your existing students. And just frankly, you know, say to all the moms, if you're looking for a summer camp for Susie, you know, where would you go look for it? What would be the resources that you'd be looking for that? Because you can track down an awful lot of those things.
I might be considering others, Ace Ramirez again, sir. Since I'm going to, you know, it's only a mile and a half away, but it is a new zip code and whatnot. Do you encourage me going to an InfoUSA, getting a mailing list, and do a direct marketing thing for both the open house, grand opening / summer camps or anything of those? What kind of mix for my marketing should it be for direct mail marketing versus a web effort, or more leaning toward one versus the other, or any kind of strategy that way?
For the relocation, if it's at all possible, I would treat it just like it's a brand new school and do a complete grand opening marketing blitz. And we spent an hour and a half a couple of weeks ago. Toby, it's up on the website, right? The call we did on grand opening.
I think that one's not up yet, but it's scheduled to be up this week. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we really covered that territory thoroughly on that call. So,
okay.
Toby, you might make a note to just email everybody when the MP3 of that goes up on the site.
It should be more than a day or two.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But we covered that thoroughly. But if at all possible, and when I say possible, if you can put together $25,000, $30,000, Joe, who's on the call, his recent grand opening, I think he spent about $20,000. I always like the number $35,000. So if you can get anywhere in that range. And it speaks to two issues. One is, I'd rather open the school physically looking kind of rough and put a ton of money into advertising and suck in a bunch of new revenue, and then use that new revenue to tweak up the facility, than to open it with everything looking perfect but not have the budget left over to put into the advertising.
Mm. Great.
And
great point.
And from that standpoint, we cover the topic of what to do. I'm not as young on that call, so it probably doesn't merit me repeating it here, but. The one question you asked on direct mail is, I would just remind something that we've told everyone a lot of times, which is what most everyone does is they don't follow up frequently enough or enough times to people who have expressed some interest. So warm leads, people who have raised their hands, people that you met at a fair, people who came in for an intro and didn't enroll, et cetera. And we spend too much time going after cold leads. And when we go after cold leads, the biggest mistake people make is trying to cast too broad a net. And so, like, the post office has this new cheap thing where you can do every door direct and so forth. But in most cases, that doesn't work nearly as well. as spending five times as much money on a leap as 10 times more qualified. So,
Correct.
So you know, that's the mistake that most of us make. And in terms of following up on a lead, I mean, you know, once somebody raises their hand, I'd like them to get, you know, 3 to 10 emails a week and 2 to 3 pieces of direct mail a week and a live human being doing an outbound call 2 or 3 times quickly right behind when they opted in, but at least every peak time from then on, plus sequential text messaging, plus sequential broadcast voicemail. You can overdo live outbound call, and you can overdo live outbound broadcast voicemail. But, you know, I mean, in a year, if you hit them 200 or 300 times by email and hit them 100 or 120 times, or that's overkill. If you hit them 25 times by direct mail and you had 4 or 5 times when you did a live outbound call until you actually got hold of them, got a yes or no, and then did broadcast voicemail behind your major mail campaigns, I mean, that's more what the kind of follow-up should be once you get somebody who's really interested. But, yeah, the other part of the question is, you're relocated a mile and a half away. I treat it like it's brand opening a brand new school. And it's a good excuse to bump your active count by 100 in the first month, and a good excuse to now be able to bring them in doing everything. And you're already doing a lot of smart things, but you can have a fresh group that you bring in at even higher price points and with better tuition structure and everything else.
No, definitely. I look forward to I know I just missed it, so I'll look forward to that before asking more questions with regards to it to prevent any overlap.
I believe that it was very thorough.
Great. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
You're quite welcome. Well, Master Miller, that's all that I have for today. If anybody has any last thoughts or quick questions, or Master Miller, something else for everybody?
I think I'm good. I'm actually going to have a few folks beta test our new member site in the next couple of days. We have two kind of big new services that we're going to be offering, and I'm going to need some people in different parts of the country to test that out for me. So I'll send around a couple of links probably by the weekend, and ask you to just go kind of check it out, see how fast it loads, see if it makes sense to you at all. You understand everything. And the second piece of that is one of these services is kind of like YouTube for instructor training, right? So we've got, I don't know, 500 or so different classroom activities. And one of the functions of that is I want to give everybody the opportunity to contribute to that if you want to. So if you have some, you know, cool activities that you're doing in class or things for instructors to think about or those types of things, mostly targeted toward, you know, on-the-floor instructor-type training, and you'd like to put it up on YouTube and upload it into the service, you can do that. So, we're going to vet them pretty thoroughly. We don't want a lot of, you know, garbage getting in or anything like that. So we're going to vet them. But if anybody has anything like that they'd like to share, you'll have the functionality to be able to do it. So I'll vet that around everybody.
I know that Mike had talked about having a big database of, like, current competitor forms and team forms and stuff like that. And that type of stuff would be useful. What I think is specifically useful for our purposes, for the purposes not only of everybody who's on the call, but that they can help with, you know, people at a lower level than they are, is to see classroom format, teaching methodology, pacing and structure of classroom, and actual introductory class, orientation class, renewal prep, highlighting sessions, that type of thing. So an awful lot of times we end up in a situation where we're trying to discuss verbally a classroom environment where a 5-minute video clip is better than a 3-hour, you know, intellectual conversation of it. So
exactly.
Quality teaching technique, quality classroom format, quality classroom pacing, structuring, and chunking, those are things that we'll be soliciting for all the inner circle people to contribute so that everybody else gets the benefit of things that you've already mastered. The The last thing is we started the conversation with, we're prepping for West Point. I hope everybody will make it. If you personally can't make it, I would encourage you to send staff and to make sure that your staff come to the B Performers Days, not to the Inner Circle Days, because as I am, it's a little different. The second thing, Mike and Joe, maybe somebody else, I'm not sure, a couple of people were still waiting for you to get that paperwork back on the fax machine or scan it and send it back, so we need that back. What we're assuming is that you're not coming to any other light meetings if you haven't given us that back. The marketing boot camp is going to be in August. That's a don't miss. And then for Inner Circle specifically, we're nailing down times to with the Disney University staff to do a full-day Disney Approach to Service seminar with their staff and then do a couple days in LA following that. So we do need to make sure we have that paperwork back from everybody. And again, the marketing boot camp, if for some reason you're not going to be able to make it, anybody who's involved with external or internal marketing on your staff, you're welcome to send them. Again, send them to a couple days of the boot camp, not to the Inner Circle meeting specifically. If you can't make it to West Point, send your instructors because they will get a lot out of it, I'm sure. So it's definitely a don't miss. And by the way, anybody who hasn't read The West Point Way of Leadership before we get there, it's available on Kindle, so you can order it. I don't know if it's available in iBooks, but it's available on Kindle, so you can order it on the Kindle app and read it on your iPad or read it on the Kindle, or you can order the physical copy from Amazon, among other places. So I would definitely recommend that. There's also those two videos that are fabulous. One is Surviving West Point that was done by National Geographic. The other one is the History Channel, Modern Marvels West Point. Both of those are really good. Both of those you can order from Amazon. So I would highly recommend those as well. Okay, well, Master Milroy and Carol, Victoria, Andy, Joe, John, Mike, Ace, Dave, Jeff, Paul, and Eric, and whoever else was lurking in the background, thank you for your participation today. And I look forward to anybody who missed their call Monday, Tuesday, just call the same time next week, Monday, Tuesday, or not Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but just put in your calendar, unless you're, you know, told otherwise for some strange reason, holiday or something. Second Tuesday every month, second Wednesday every month.
Yeah, and by the way, I sent everybody the entire year's worth of calls and events last night, so you should have that in your inbox as well.
There you go. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay, guys. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Well, thanks, everybody.
Master Oliver, do you want me to call yourself?